As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson. Joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna in Chicago. Matt, this is our last episode before Christmas, and after yesterday's kind of COVID scare sort of thing, where it's like, is this game still happening? Yes. Just the media access has changed. I think my brain was in a really weird spot when I went to bed last night, because no joke, I had a dream that you FaceTimed me from the Camelback Inn to show me how skilled you were as a skateboarder, and somehow you were skateboarding with Jess Smetana, who's Notre Dame media personality. So I gotta say, like, my brain is a little bit fried after this last month. I need to get to the Camelback Inn after Christmas morning on December 25th.
I don't know how I'm supposed to follow that revelation.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
I'm not going to the game. I don't skateboard. I've never skateboarded in my life. I've never actually met Jess. Nor do I think I FaceTime you, since we do this thing via Zoom enough where we don't need to see each other any more than we already do.
God, it's just been a month.
It is Festivus. I don't know if that's like your airing of grievances. Mine would, normally there's a lot with this team. I don't have anything really to complain about right now other than COVID, which is not a Notre Dame problem. That's a world problem. So I think for the most part, health notwithstanding, everyone's in a really good place right now. Well, at least everyone other than whatever the hell's going on in your brain when you lie down to bed at night. But I was there Monday with you doing some interviews. I know they had access Tuesday and Wednesday in person as well. Appreciate it, because who knows when that will ever happen for anyone covering football at any level again, after what we've seen happen in this country the last week or so. It was notable to me, I believe yesterday was the day where the college football playoff came out and basically put out their contingency plans. And, you know, there's basically a week to get this game in, the Fiesta Bowl and all the other New Year's Six games, if one team can't go, except for the semifinals, which are forfeits if that happens, which I've seen teams claim national championships for worse reasons than
Alabama is many forfeiting.
Yeah. Hopefully we don't have to cross that bridge this season. But we'll see. I mean, I'm glad there's a week leeway for this game. I'm glad you're still going to Phoenix, and we'll
you too.
get to experience that weather, if nothing else, while you're out there, because the media stuff looks like it's going to be pretty restricted, and understandably so. But I do hope whatever's going on in that brain of yours settles down, at least by the time Christmas morning arrives and you got to open gifts with your kids.
Yeah. So when I check into the Camelback Inn next week, and if I see like anyone skateboarding, I'm just going to be like triggered around that.
Think of me and skateboard.
But,
yeah.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it was interesting talking to Marcus Freeman on Wednesday. It was sort of the last access here, and him mentioned at the time, it seemed notable, because he's like, yeah, the Fiesta Bowl called and wondered if we wanted to just come out 2 days before the game. I was like, well, that's a bit ominous. And then lo and behold, I think, as Marcus is talking, basically the college football playoff committee is putting in all these contingencies about what happens if someone can't play. Texas A&M is opting out of the Gator Bowl, replaced by Rutgers. Yeah, it was just sort of a weird throwback to 2020 day in college football. Hopefully it'll just, that will be the only one that we experience, but it, you know, Notre Dame still breaking for Christmas. You know, the way Freeman talked through it, it was just like, they will sort of bubble up a little bit in Arizona, but they will have a full week there to sort of do that. And like, if they need to get something out of their system, then they can do that. But it's, Notre Dame goes into it healthy for the most part, you know, no new injuries is to hear Freeman tell it. We were at practice over the weekend. It was fairly upbeat. You know, you had Maris Liafau kind of walking through, not that he'll play in the game, Blake Fisher in full uniform, not that he'll play in the game either, but you know, Freeman talked about kind of the good on good concept. I think the way the players have described it, the practices are shorter, kind of snappier, a little bit more competitive than how Brian Kelly used to run them. But, you know, it's, I don't know how you feel about this, but I think one of the things that are kind of the known unknowns with Freeman is like, how do you run a practice? How do you prepare for a bowl? Well, the last bowl game he prepared for went pretty well. Cincinnati almost upset Georgia. So in a New Year's Six non-playoff game. So if Freeman can sort of just take what Luke Fickell did a year ago and do it at Notre Dame now, I would bet pretty heavily that that formula would work.
Yeah, I would hope so. I wonder how much different it was day to day during, again, hate to go back there, but during COVID, the heat of COVID times last year versus this year. You know, I spoke with Logan Diggs on Monday and he was pretty adamant that things are a lot more competitive day to day right now as they get ready for the bowl game. I don't know. I mean, look, Notre Dame blows Oklahoma State out or gets blown out, I'm sure we can draw some kind of conclusions from that. As different as this situation is for Marcus Freeman and for everybody around the program, I don't know any grand conclusions we'll be able to draw from practice preparation when he basically gets thrown into the fire while they're preparing for a pretty big game, at least, you know, the second biggest game probably they've played all season long, at least in terms of opponent. So the whole new, there's new energy, there's new this. I mean, every coaching search ever, whether it was for good or bad reasons, right? Like if the last coach didn't let us play music at practice, this one did. Right. Or, you know, the last coach did and he wasn't serious enough and this one isn't. He's all business. Like we saw the inverse of that when Jimbo Fisher went to Texas A&M to replace Kevin Sumlin and Willie Taggart went to Florida State to replace Jimbo Fisher. Like, it was just like, all right, like whatever your personal preference is, here you go.
Costanza, do the opposite.
Yeah. On Festivus.
Yes.
So it's interesting. I mean, I'm, you know, not a doctor, nor do I pretend to be. The idea of the roster and particularly this roster going to so many different parts of the country over the next couple of days and coming back. Yeah. I say this, I have two family members, not under my roof, but you know, immediate family members who tested positive for COVID this week, who've been living like hermits. It's just everywhere right now. They're fine. So no concerns there. They're vax. Like it's just, I don't know. You see the Gator Bowl situation. Frankly, I'm shocked that hasn't happened elsewhere yet. When you see what's happening in the other sports around the country, I just hope, you know, especially, you know, I was looking at stuff for Indianapolis to prepare for the national championship game and traveling there in a couple of weeks. And I'm just like, multiple people I talked to are like, yeah, if the game gets played, I'm like, God, like,
yeah, it's
there. I know you have to go there, but like, I don't want to hear it. And now I'm saying it, you know, for Notre Dame's sake, like, I just hope this game gets in. And I hope, you know, both teams are full strength or close to it. And that we get to see each team put their best foot forward. I mean, a lot of differences of both sides. I mean, Jim Knowles was the heartbeat of that program this year at Oklahoma State, not there. Marcus Freeman was the defense coordinator for Notre Dame, was now making his head coaching debut at the age of 35. And with a staff that will largely be his staff next year, but with a couple guys who will not be there next year, we're pretty confident saying. So it's a big game too. It's not the Camping World Bowl. It's not some second or third tier bowl. This is a New Year's Six game, and Notre Dame, from all indications, is treating it with the utmost importance. Which, you know, not that they shouldn't do that, but they at least seem to be taking it seriously publicly. And Marcus Freeman knows the opportunity at hand, particularly for a guy who wants to get his era off on the right foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean Oklahoma State. You know, Jim Knowles going to Ohio State, like you said, they also had a starting safety enter the transfer portal yesterday. It's, you know, if this feels like a big game, but it certainly doesn't feel like the Fiesta Bowl that I covered in 2015 or 2005 or the Sugar Bowl in 2006, where like there are some factors pulling in different directions if you're Notre Dame or if you're Oklahoma State. But I, you know, I'm going to be fascinated to see, you know, how does the Jack Cohn, Tyler Buchner rotation work when the defense is more like Wisconsin and Cincinnati? Did the offensive line actually improve as much as it seems that it did? You know, can Lorenzo Styles have the breakout game that I feel like he's had coming for quite a while? And then, you know, defensively, who calls the defense? You know, Marcus Freeman was still kind of a little cagey about that. I don't know about you, but I would be surprised if he did not call it, because Reese is running the offense entirely. It's his show over there. I don't think Freeman's going to insert himself into the offense now. And he even talked about that in his availability on Wednesday. It's just like, he hasn't watched a whole lot of Chris Tyree in November. So when he was going through his turf toe, he was kind of unaware of it in terms of watching him every day. And so I think he would lean heavily on Reese to do the offense. And if that's true, then it would open the door for him to call plays on defense, which he obviously did a very good job of this season.
Yeah. I mean, quarterback, I think is the number one topic when we talk about specific positions on this roster right now. Obviously, you know, Jack Cohn's going to be playing his last game, last college game, his last game in Notre Dame uniform. And it's seemed to have really gotten better and better as the season has gone on, especially as that offensive line has gotten its act together. But, you know, a bowl game is somewhat of an audition for next year. And we've seen them use Tyler Buchner. I think the way they probably would have liked to at the end of the day, coming into the season, if you took their, you know, expectation versus reality preseason and in season of how it turned out, I think it would be pretty close to a mirror image of one another, but there's going to be no Jack Cohn next year. So you've got to get Tyler Buchner reps, and not just in specialty packages, but, you know, regular offensive full drive reps before next season. We saw Keaton Slovis mentioned publicly this week that he had contact with Notre Dame. He obviously has since signed with Pittsburgh, which I think was what most people thought was going to happen regardless. But it opened up the question, right, of, well, is Notre Dame in the market for another quarterback? And if so, what kind of quarterback do they want? I don't know how you feel about this, but for me, Slovis is kind of too good to be a guy Notre Dame wants right now. By that, I mean, like, you've got such a precious dynamic and chemistry in that room with three guys there next year who are going to be in their third year, second year, and first year, respectively, with Pine, Buchner, and Steve Angeli, that if you're bringing in a guy, it's more for depth and competition purposes, not to anoint him starter the way Jack Cohn essentially was this year, the way Keaton Slovis would be wherever he ends up, because he's already started for almost 3 years now at a prestigious program like USC. So, and look, if you bring in a guy to start and he doesn't start, or he's under the impression he's going to start and he doesn't start, that could be a rough combination as well. So I think you need another body in that room, another scholarship body, an upperclassman, maybe a guy who has been a career backup elsewhere and is just looking to get a Notre Dame degree and get valuable reps or get into coaching or something at the next level. And look, that's where the real nitty gritty of the evaluation process comes out, right? Like, me or you could look at any 4 or 5 star in the portal right now, there are a lot of them, and say, oh, you should go after this guy. But if you're looking for a very specific role for one of those guys, and I think they will be there because they're more qualified, at least, and by qualified I mean, you know, star rankings and high school pedigrees, but they're more qualified quarterbacks and position players in the portal than there will end up being available spots, at least at the Power Five level. So I do think there'll be an opportunity for Notre Dame to add to that room and make that room stronger and better. I just don't know who that option would be.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I agree. And it's like Slovis was too good to take, but also not good enough. Like, this is not Justin Fields.
Right.
Like, he's not good enough to take and blow the whole room up because this guy is a transcendent talent. Like, Keaton Slovis is just a good quarterback. Like, I think he would be the guy you would feel most comfortable with if you're Notre Dame next year. But at some point you gotta invest in Tyler Buchner. And I think now's a good time to do it. And I agree with it. Like, there's a, you know, the name is escaping me, but there's like a grad transfer from Dartmouth. You know, is he going to come in? Is he going to be better than Drew Pine? I don't know. But I do think Notre Dame just sort of looks at it as like, we have a mobile quarterback who's really athletic, who also had a tight hamstring, who missed time, and a bad ankle that he was a little bit gimpy on. Like, and we want to run him. Because why wouldn't you? The guy is really, really athletic. But when you do that, you open yourself up to injury. Notre Dame's run of starting one quarterback for the entire season is probably overdue to expire now. I mean, this is something that was a Brian Kelly staple for a long time, starting multiple guys. You know, and I just don't think Notre Dame looks at the Buchner-Pine situation and be like, all right, if Buchner has a hamstring or an ankle on November 1st, and Notre Dame's got Clemson that week, and they've got USC 3 weeks later. Notre Dame's not going to feel good about that. You know, Drew Pine is, I think, can be a serviceable college quarterback and help you, you know, beat a bunch of teams on the schedule. But there's certainly a drop off there athletically. So I think you got to reinforce yourself at the number two more than you got to find a new number one, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And the other part, and this isn't unique to Keaton Slovis, but since we're talking about him, like, we'll talk about, like, that guy had an NIL deal with United Airlines. He has representation. A lot of these guys who have played elsewhere at big programs already have agents, and there's nothing wrong with that, but you don't hire representation so that you could have a chance to be a backup quarterback at another place after starting for so long. Like, he's going to Pittsburgh because he's succeeding the third place Heisman Trophy guy in Kenny Pickett. And Pitt has pretty much no proven people behind him. And he's going to go in there and start immediately, barring anything unforeseen. So I think that's a dynamic you need to keep in mind. And look, when you look at who has had success at Notre Dame as a quarterback in recent years, it hasn't been those guys. Like, it really hasn't been Brandon Wimbush. It hasn't been Phil Dracovic. It was Ian Book, 3-star. It was Jack Cohn, who I think was a 3-star, but was a grad transfer from Wisconsin. It was Deshaun Kaiser, who was, if he was a 4-star, he was a low 4-star. I think he was, you know,
he was a low 4-star.
Low 4-star. It was not these blue chip can't miss prospects who came in and lit the world on fire. It's been guys who understand the place, can take coaching, know their roles, and are going to do their job without complaint, kind of like Drew Pine did in his limited relief options this season. You know, maybe the math doesn't work out class-wise with this, but like, I think there are people at Notre Dame who are thinking maybe Jack Lausch could have been that guy. He obviously ended up going to
There are definitely people at Notre Dame who feel that way.
At Northwestern. Yeah, I'm a little biased just because, like, I'm in Chicago and I did a recruiting notebook on the state's recruiting about a month ago, and unsolicited, I had so many high school coaches tell me, this guy is the best player in the state. How does he not have an offer yet? Like, he is willing Brother Rice week after week. He's going to Notre Dame for baseball, but no, like, this kid, if you get him in a practice, and he was going to be a preferred walk-on at Notre Dame, they all said, if you get him on the field, if you get him in a practice, he's going to make life hell for everyone else on that field, and he's not going to leave until you force him off. And those are the guys who have had success at Notre Dame at the quarterback position. Usually not the guys you can win a national championship with, but and certainly Tyler Buchner is a departure.
You can win every other game, though.
Yeah. as Cade McNamara and Stetson Bennett get ready for a semifinal matchup here in a couple weeks, which, by the way, Festivus, as we're recording this, see a tweet from the Orange Ball. Happy birthday, both Kirby Smart and Jim Harbaugh, who apparently share a birthday on Festivus, which makes way too much sense for way too many reasons. The quarterback situation will be interesting. And while we're talking about it, Ian Book is going to be starting after today's news with the, I guess it was a COVID outbreak with the Saints, which I will
tell you, when the state of Louisiana has a football problem, turn to Notre Dame.
I was watching the Monday night game where they somehow shut out Tom Brady, but Mike Tirico was calling it. And I'm like, you got to get Ian Book in here. The guy's undefeated when Mike Tirico's calling his games. Like, he's got to come in and he's got to make something happen. Unfortunately, he never did get in, but we'll see him get that chance. Where are they playing? Miami, right? I think on Monday.
Miami. So. Ian Book versus Tua Tagovailoa.
There we go. First time, right? Yeah. He only played Mac Jones.
They did not meet in the regular season or the playoff, but what are the, we should probably spend a little bit of time. Notre Dame's coaching staff next year. Yes. I asked Marcus Freeman about the timeline of it, what you're looking for. He talked about the defensive coordinator. Basically, we're going to run the system we're running. The DC has to come in and like use our terminology, like put that stress on the coordinator. Don't put it on the players, which I found refreshing. It's like an updated spin on like players over plays.
Yeah.
But like, you're a highly paid professional to come up with new language. Don't make the players come up with it themselves.
So they're not going to be hiring the new head coach at American Heritage High School is what you're saying.
No, I don't think so. I don't think BVG is coming back to Notre Dame in any capacity, but, there's certainly they got to have a new special teams coach. The name that I've heard a few times is Brian Mason from Cincinnati, who goes back with Marcus Freeman to Kent State, to Purdue as a GA in those spots, was at Cincinnati in 2017. So this is really, I believe, one of the first seasons that he has not worked with Freeman in some time. We'll see how that shakes out. Defensive coordinator needs to be filled. Offensive coordinator or offensive line coach will at some point after the bowl game. I am less certain about receiver, although based on how the recruiting, I guess, return on investment did not come in. I don't know how you sort of don't keep an open mind to that if you're Notre Dame.
Yeah. I don't know what the market is for receivers coaches right now. Obviously it's weird. This is the first year in quite some time. I think you could say the position, if it didn't overperform, it at least met expectations. It was not a disappointment. I mean, I think even the young guys who we were unsure about coming into the year have at least shown enough to get you excited for the future.
The recruiting has been uneven.
Yes.
But the development with Del Alexander has been pretty good. I mean, Chase Claypool, Miles Boykin. You certainly got a lot out of Chris Fink, who came on the show and explained why Del Alexander was a good receivers coach. But the recruiting push in this program now, I think, is going to be completely different than it was under Brian Kelly. So I don't know where they go with that. But I mean, the offensive line, I think we've heard some familiar names on the offensive line. How do you look at that position moving forward in terms of where Notre Dame may go?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've heard from multiple people, multiple different versions of Harry Hiestand's interest or lack thereof. We all saw what he's capable of. As we see Zach Martin and Quinn Nelson make Pro Bowls again, I think they both made it every single year they've been in the NFL, which probably isn't terribly surprising for anyone who followed those guys closely in Notre Dame, but it's still damn impressive nonetheless. Look, if he's interested, that's a hard guy to say no to, because I think if you're comparing everyone to him at that school, and I'm by no means a technician when it comes down to breaking down offensive line play, but I just can't imagine anyone's going to come in after you interview that guy and absolutely wow you. Now, they might have a better recruiting approach. Again, I've heard mixed reactions about how active he was as a recruiter. Some have told me he's really good. Others told me there were times he would refuse to get on the road when everyone else was. So, I think sometimes when you can coach and develop as good as he has and can, that eliminates that weak, that negates that weakness, so to speak. It will be 2022 by the time the new O-line coach is here. The way you talk and teach and develop college kids in 2022 is not what it was even in 2017, which I think was his last year at Notre Dame. Not everyone you bring to the building is wired the way Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey are and who can take it. And I don't say this to knock her. He said, all, they call him the godfather in South Bend for a reason. The guy's incredible at his job, but you know, for every Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey turned out, there are guys who either left the program or really, really struggled under his watch because they just could not vibrate to that same frequency every single day. He had a way of just getting into you in the film room and out of the practice field that burned a hole in some of these guys' heads and hearts. And, you know, there are some who would be willing to, I think, stand up and say, you can't hire this guy based on their experiences with him. But the guy's really, really good at what he does. If he brings along a younger GA or analyst, maybe a Chris Watt or whomever, someone with experience at this place who's a little bit younger and can relate a little bit better. I mean, I think that can work. I just, not that I worry about the dynamic, but the dynamic of a guy like that working for Brian Kelly is a little bit different than the dynamic of a guy working for Marcus Freeman, who's the quote unquote player's coach and whose staff, at least right now, looks like it's going to be one of the youngest in the country. Maybe it works out because maybe they need a heavier hand in some places than they would in others. I don't know. I do think his resume and his track record at Notre Dame makes him a very, very tough guy to ignore if he ultimately is serious about getting back into it. But again, I've heard mixed signals on whether he's fully committed to getting back into it, whether he's enjoying retirement life and so forth. But we'll see how that plays out. Justin Fry is another name we both heard. Yeah. He was brought in 2018 when they ended up hiring Jeff Quinn. I don't know a whole lot about him. He's a pretty good rep, but I'm lying to you if I say I have a great idea of what kind of O-line coach should be at Notre Dame.
Yeah. The Heistand stuff is, I was talking to somebody who's knows Heistand well, familiar with Notre Dame. It's like echoed sort of what you said, like 2017 is a long time ago in terms of how you coach players. And there's no doubt that if it was Heistand, he would have to change his vocabulary. I don't know if he would need to necessarily change like the style of coaching. Like he could still be incredibly demanding and exacting. And I think you could still yell. But you've been to those practices. You could be watching the defense 200 yards away and you couldn't hear what Clark Lee was saying because Harry Heistand was yelling something on the other side of the field.
Talking about two different personalities.
Exactly. So there would have to be some kind of like adjustment to the kind of Heistand you're getting. You would need a updated Heistand model.
I've heard the film room stuff makes the worse. Field stuff look like child's play. Like,
okay,
the amount of equipment they had to pay to replace because you'd break so much during film studies and really get personal with these guys. I mean, I think you know who I'm talking about. We both heard from people close to at least one highly recruited guy who left that program who said he still gets like nauseous when he hears the Heistand name. Like that's how incredibly personal and demanding and in your face he got with some of those guys, to the point where when he left, I genuinely wondered whether it was leaving for the NFL or whether it was like time's up. Like it was not a pretty scene with some of those guys.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
That all makes it complicated, right? Like, I don't know if Notre Dame wants to jump into that again, but if he stand can sort of meet you halfway on it. And like the recruiting element, I don't know. It's like, did he refuse to recruit based on the input of offensive linemen? No, he did. He was the one that signed McGlinchey and Nelson Bars and Mustafer. He brought in a lot of really good talent. They hit at a very high rate. I also feel like recruiting offensive linemen at Notre Dame is as easy a position as there is in football. So they have a very well stocked offensive line right now. You look at the freshman class that just finished up and you look at the class that they just signed. It's really a phenomenal group. So it would be an adjustment for sure from Jeff Quinn, but I also think you would be getting NFL level technical coaching here. That's going to, if you're an offensive lineman at Notre Dame, you know, if you're good enough to go pro, you will go pro because this guy will get it out of you.
Yeah, I just think it's a really hard position to screw up, based on the recent legacy of that place and does that mean you go with a guy like Keystan, who's proven goods, it might have a little bit of baggage, or does that mean you take a guy with less of a heavy hand because you've already got, I mean, let's see, you got two true freshmen on this year's team who are locks to start next year at the tackle spots. I mean, how many places can you say that about in the country? We've got tons of other good recruits, both in this class and in the incoming class. I just think that's a hard position to screw up. And I don't know how that shapes Notre Dame's philosophy when it comes to doing that. And again, by all accounts, this is Tommy Reese's hire, full stop. Like the autonomy piece of staying on as the OC, in addition to the pay bump, is real. Like he's the head coach of offense. He's going to have the final say on everyone who comes into that building to work on that side of the ball. DC is an interesting one to me, Pete. I mean, when you
can do it a number of different ways, right?
Yeah. I mean, when everything, got settled in those first 72 hours or whatever it was, when Kelly leaves and Freeman gets hired, I'm thinking like, well, they'll either promote Elston or Freeman will still call the plays, like kind of like Lincoln Riley at OU, yeah. Right? Didn't have an OC, so to speak, because he was a head coach, called the plays. Everything I've gathered is no, they're going to hire an outside defense coordinator. They're going to swing big. My initial reaction to that was, why would you do that when you already have a staff in place? To which I was told, well, just did it with Marcus Freeman last year. It worked out pretty well, which is a good point. I don't know who the Marcus Freeman of this hiring cycle is. I do know that in addition to Notre Dame, Florida, LSU, Miami, Oklahoma State, Texas A&M, Oregon, and Wake Forest, among others, are all the market for defense coordinators. And all of them, frankly, need a defense coordinator more than Notre Dame does, because at the end of the day, they've got some really good defensive coaches on that staff who can make it work regardless of who else comes into the building.
I don't think that they will do this, but if they promoted Elston to DC and then let's just say they made Lazinski the linebackers coach, I'm not saying that would be like a killer defensive staff in terms of experience overall, but I think we would look at that with Marcus as a head coach and be like, all right, I mean, this will definitely work. But what we've both been told is like, they're targeting more of an outside hire. And then, what Marcus intimated on Wednesday was it was going to be an outside hire, because if you're hiring somebody that then fits in with your current staff as DC, that means it's an outside hire. You already know the staff that you have. So whether that's, you know, Mike Tressel or at Cincinnati or John Haycock at Iowa State, I mean, I think there are enough sort of steady, more experienced hands out there that are not the hot name that Marcus was a year ago. Like, I don't think that's the sort of competitive hiring spree that Notre Dame's going to be entering into this year. It's who fits with us. Doesn't need to be some huge up and comer. Like, in fact, it's probably good if it's not. I think somebody who's been around the block a few times would be probably a more advantageous hire for Notre Dame at this point. So I think they've got a lot of options in like sort of that competitive market for DCs. I'm not saying that it doesn't apply, but if they were trying to hire Marcus Freeman as DC this year, but with this market, with all the schools you mentioned, that would be a hell of a recruiting derby to win if you're Notre Dame. Like, now they don't really need to worry about that as much.
Best coaching choice in the history of sports. Steve Kerr choosing the Warriors over the Knicks in 2014, or Marcus Freeman choosing Notre Dame over LSU last year?
Yeah. I mean, Marcus definitely came out ahead it's certainly one of the great college football career decisions of all time.
Maybe he's the head coach of LSU right now. I don't know. It's crazy how quickly time flies.
there's no doubt about that. I mean, was there anything else from this week? I mean, you talked to Diggs. I talked to Lindsey. I talked to Xavier Watts a little bit. We got John McNulty for the first time.
Yeah, we need to get him on the show. Chris O'Leary
for the first time. Yeah. You'd be great.
The longest podcast ever, but probably the best too.
But it was, I mean, was there anything else that you took away from this week other than just like, it was refreshing to talk to kind of a new batch of assistant coaches?
Refreshing, fun. The eagle-eyed listeners and readers will notice the assistants who weren't made available this week were Del Alexander and Jeff Quinn. And I think that was it as far as full-time guys.
Correct. We
haven't
talked to Lance Taylor since I think we may have only talked to Lance Taylor once.
He fits in too, because we don't know what he'll be coaching next year.
Correct.
Like, yeah, the guys who have at least the most public uncertainty are the ones who were not put out there, which I understand if they can't even tell you.
I would do it the same way.
In a couple weeks. So that's why we're talking about those positions the most. Whether they bring in a running backs coach and move Taylor to receivers coach, I don't know. It's clear he's a guy who's going to be on that staff next year, though. They really like him. Both on and off the field. We do have to do a shout out. If we're talking about Shamrock bumps, Michael Vincent got put on scholarship. And although he was never a full-time guest, all of WAPU Nation that has come on here has singled him out. For the uninitiated. And I'm a little disappointed we haven't seen a video of that, because we've seen so many great videos. Really,
they're too busy. They're working on the head coach videos.
Yeah. Well, we need a self-produced one, because the scholarship videos are always the best. But congratulations to Milk. Maybe he'll join the podcast at some point after, although I think he's probably exhausted any potential Shamrock bumps by getting his education paid for the rest of the year.
And he has an NIL deal with like the Milk Cooperative of Indiana or something.
I did not know that. Wow.
He posted, I don't know if it was Twitter or Instagram, but he is industry, as Chris Fink pointed out to us.
You got to tell our listeners about your Shamrock bump on Instagram.
I was delighted to get a notification that Joe Schmidt was now following me on Instagram.
Newly engaged Joe Schmidt, for those who haven't heard.
I think we have plenty of listeners of the show who know Joe Schmidt, and we'll point out that we're talking about him again, because
he clearly doesn't listen.
Joe Schmidt's favorite things.
He commented on my Instagrams on game days while he was playing at Notre Dame. Not that we ever questioned where his head was at, but
that's why he's going to be running America in the not too distant future. But it was a productive week around here. I think I'm hopeful, like everyone else, that this game goes off and Notre Dame gets down there and you get to sort of see as full a complement of Notre Dame's roster and Oklahoma State's roster as possible. Because I mean, look, the idea of Marcus Freeman being 1-0 with a top 10 win and an entire offseason to sort of savor it and recruit on it is pretty salivating if you're Notre Dame. I mean, that is your dream offseason. And I know college football can change in an instant, but it would set up Notre Dame to be in a very good way for the next 9 months.
Basically, you would be bottling the energy of this last month and spreading it across the rest of the offseason. Like, no matter how you win, just don't lose. Not that losing the Fiesta Bowl is the worst thing in the world, but to your point, if you can keep this momentum going unabated, that's really invigorating to everyone around the program. And if they win the game, that absolutely will happen, because it's just been nothing but good vibes and everyone in agreement about everything around Notre Dame for the first time. And
era of good feelings
in a positive way. I don't know how else to sign off on Festivus other than on that note. We'll have to displace the Festivus poll. We'll have to put it elsewhere.
Maybe we could spin it forward to Christmas as we wrap up. Because I'm assuming your child does not listen to podcasts, what is the must-have gift in the Fortuna household this year?
I guess she's not listening. I did get she's a big basketball fan and Sesame Street fan. Steph Curry came out with a line of Sesame Street basketball gear. So I've got her a shirt with Cookie Monster draining threes with the Curry logo. Nice. Her birthday is shortly after Christmas. So we're still like Santa and mom and dad are still in the process of like figuring out what goes for what. But there might be a bicycle in there. We'll see.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. It's a lot of Nerf guns in our house this year, which I am already regretting before they've been opened. And a few games for the Switch, which was complicated by the fact that my son, I think, not to throw him under the bus, lost the Switch. So we have to replace that to then play the games that they will then be opening. So this is the complications of parenthood for those who have either already enjoyed it and are laughing their asses off or future parents, which I'm sure we have some of those listeners as well. Just be prepared for this down the road.
You mean they weren't satisfied with just having a sixth row midfield seat for the Brian Kelly finale at Notre Dame Stadium? That didn't cover you.
Who knew they were seeing the end of an era there? Although they sat in those same seats for the Duke football game in 2016, which was the end of the BVG era. So
never again. My kids go, is what you're
when
saying.
When my kids go to Notre Dame football games, weird stuff happens. The other one was Virginia Tech in 2019. The Ian Book shushing, but they left at halftime. So after Jafar Armstrong's fumbled air return for a touchdown, they were out of there. They weren't staying put for that. But on that note, we will be back next week post Christmas. I will be down in Arizona, enjoying the weather, if not the media access. Matt will be in Chicago. You're not covering any of the playoff games, right?
No, I'll be at the championship in Indy, God willing. But that's it on my travel itinerary for now.
Lovely. Well, until then, we will. Thanks for being with us this year and this month in particular of crazy Notre Dame.
Same thing.
Talk.
Year, month.
year, month. It's all the same. Fever dreams, if you're having them, all sorts of Christmas craziness. So we appreciate you being with us. We appreciate you listening. Matt and I will be back next week to preview the Fiesta Bowl in earnest. So until then, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. He's Matt Fortuna in Chicago. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks in South Bend. Thanks for being with us.